kan vi ikke have det. Skal.
To check something out on the ongoing process of calibrating to what is life and what is ego. And it's been with some work around the property.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the voices telling me that they're kind of silly examples, but the concrete is really helpful.
Oh, yes, yes.
So, one example was some trimming over here on the lilac, and also hurt the lilac a bit with the chainsaw, and so we were looking at a possible response to that.
Uh-huh.
You know, is there some assistance we could offer?
To the lilac.
To the lilac.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we're looking at is keeping the rainwater off of the wound area.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sherry, in an email, has talked about putting on like the dog collar, the little Victorian dog collar, like over the...
Mm-hmm.
And so what was fun was, I don't know if it was right away when I read the email or a little bit later, but it's like there's this image of like of a milk carton, plastic milk carton, and like the cut out of it had already been made and started to wrap around, and that was like the image that I had of the, and then of the collar that was going to go over the tree, and then I don't, it's not really a conversation, but there's just like some sort of understanding that, but if you put plastic against a tree, the rain could just run down that trunk right underneath the plastic down into the wound, and so then this rubber band appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And then I laughed because I imagined trying to put a rubber band over a tree to get to the and then it appeared the pond lining. We have some extra pond liner,
mm-hmm,
in the shop that I just noticed like 3 or 4 days earlier. And kind of a similar thing, like it already, a little piece had been cut out, and it was just kind of like building like that. And I don't know, I just thought that was really fun. And
yeah.
I don't know if any of that would have worked or anything like that,
mm-hmm,
but what was enjoyable was what is taking me away from projects in the past is some sort of conversation,
mm-hmm,
about how it should be done and how we don't know how to do that and how we don't have the stuff and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh. So let's see if I'm hearing the process piece of this, right, Scott, that previously the conversation about projects is always around, well, you don't have the expertise or you don't have the skill or you don't know how to do it, so you can't do this project. But this project that arose around the lilac from a place of deep caring, right?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it's not that it's you use an object in order to take care of the tree and then the tree gets wounded. Right? Then there's that place of how do I offer assistance to that tree.
Yeah.
They're seeking guidance but not offering assistance,
yeah,
to that tree. There's a suggestion. And so there's an openness to, first of all, there's an openness to ask. And then the first little seed of a possibility gets dropped in.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of indulging that conversation that says, well, I don't know how to make a cone or whatever else, there's that willingness to stay open to whatever life drops in terms of how to take care of or how to create that thing in order to take care of the wound in the tree.
Yeah.
And I think what you said, which is really the important point, is being in that process, it's not necessarily
yeah,
that what drops in may work, but you'll get to find out.
Yeah. Well, and in fact in this case we decided not to do anything at this point.
Yeah.
But it didn't matter, really.
It didn't matter.
Yeah.
So here's it. And I love it because I think what we can see is so many levels of process, right? The process of staying open,
mm-hmm,
to insight. The process of a project being constructed by life.
Mm-hmm.
The project, you know, yes, no rubber band, but clearly what life is saying is there's something that needs to hold it. You can extrapolate always from any process with life what the principles are,
uh-huh, yeah,
that are being taught.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
The widest principle being, it doesn't matter what it is, life has a way of talking to us about it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the image that just came in, it's like, it's almost like if you're, well, I don't know what that is, it's like watching a presentation and somebody has their computer screen up and things are moving like this.
Yeah.
Coming in. And then, yeah, the principles is good too, because another one was just so, like, when we close out houses, we have a little signs that everyone who's been here knows, you know, in use. And when we're not using that facility, we want people to be clear that they're closed, so we wrap this red tape around them and write closed on it, which is great because it's really obvious, and if you try to move the handle, you couldn't. But we were looking at some other ways to do that so the tape wouldn't stick to the thing and paint would come off. So anyway, I was doing something with that, and I had made essentially the same thing, but rather than it sticking, there would be a clasp. And so I was trying to find something. I'd used a hole punch to punch the strap, and I needed something to hold it together. And what occurred was, like those little manila envelope things, it's like a pin and it spreads open like that. And I'm like, well, I bet you we have one of those in the office, and we did. But for some reason, the round side of it was really small, like it would have went right through the, I don't know why it wouldn't, it didn't make any sense to me. But anyway, I was just following it along because that's where I was.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, well, maybe the shop has something that's bigger that'll not go slide through the hole. And I couldn't find anything. And it's like, and then it occurred, well, if this isn't the way to go, then I won't find the thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to be pushing or stressed about it or making something happen. And then right after that, it occurred to put a little washer on it to expand the... And then I looked down where the washer used to be, and they weren't. But then right away, I found where the washers were and put it on, and it worked. But just the whole... That first example and that example, they're just so relaxing. And there's just that trust, like in that last one. Well, if I'm not going to find the thing to make it clasp, then maybe this isn't the thing. Maybe that's not the point of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
But there wasn't anything wrong or, you know...
Yeah, it's really what you're describing is creativity, right? Being in that process of creation where I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I don't know what's next. I'm going to find out, and so something gets made.
Yeah.
Right? You could go to the store and get whatever it is and put it on, but it's not as much fun as experimenting with all the stuff that you've got around
that
you can
touch.
it's actually what Sherry would call it it's kind of like the Huber special, right?
Uh-huh.
Where you basically use what you've got.
Yeah.
And use what the insight from life,
uh-huh,
your own imagination, your ability to experiment,
yeah,
your ability to reuse,
that's funny,
whatever is available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because when I was doing that, what occurred is, like, they have shows like that where people, it's
uh-huh,
like you have this amount of time and they have a whole bunch of stuff that just,
yeah,
seems random, and, you know, they make a car out of it or something. You know?
Exactly. Well, I remember, I mean, this dates me so much, right? In 18, when they, that, the, sh- I
mean, yeah, you know, the 18.
Templeton Tech, that was a specialty. You get locked in a room and have to get out of it. You manufacture something, whatever it is,
yeah,
whether it's explosives or tanks or whatever it is,
yeah,
get out of that. It used to be so ingenious.
Yeah, yeah. And so that, and I was just seeing how fun those things were because I didn't really have an expectation or any idea of how it would go. And then today, just real quickly, I was working on these steps in the garden. And I ended up not having as much fun towards the end because there was this idea of how it should go and how the steps should look. And it wasn't looking like that. And I couldn't quite understand why it wasn't looking like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was that, and then there was a pushing and trying to get it right and be perfect. And it just sapped all the energy. It was completely different than that, just being here and being informed in that way.
Yeah, yeah. It's when we get to whatever that equivalent of the word we want to use is God's steps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because it's sort of like, oh, I know, I've done steps before, and I just completely lost the thing I was enjoying.
Yeah.
As opposed to, these are, I assume when you say God's steps.
It's like life, it's how life wants the steps to be, not how you want the steps to be. Right.
Well, it's funny because it's kind of like, well, I don't really know, but I do know.
Uh-huh.
So there was, you know, sort of like a pseudo-opening or something.
Right, well, in that sense of, well, I've done it before, so I'm referencing something else. Yeah. Whereas, you know, to put a red tape and make it stick around a you sign, it's the virgin material. Whoever did this before.
Yeah. It's good to have, I love the whole get the broad spectrum on the workshop.
Yeah.
Kind of the flow one, and then kind of the stress, hanging it over to conditioned mind one. You just get that calibration of how it feels.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that there's a process of possibility and enjoyment, or a process of stress. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So I want to look at the lilac a little bit more, because when the word lilac got mentioned, I had a lot of body sensations.
Oh, because it's your lilac.
Well, I've all done the project too. Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know,
I'm a steward.
It's my lilac.
Yeah. And so I saw the wound, and so this is so, this is my whole life. It's not that bad. You know, I've seen worse. It'll just get over. You know, it'll just heal. I was looking at where the limb came off, and I was sort of wondering, you know, that's a big cut where the limb came off. I wonder if that's going to be okay with that limb. But again, just hopped right over that and was more enchanted with the color of purple that was running through the heart of the wood and the floral smell that it had, which I never knew about lilac. And so I just like, you know, just it's just so common, that place of unless your leg is off, it's like, you know, it's okay. It'll survive. You know.
Yeah. So watching that reaction as a process that's very familiar to you, which is simply ignoring it, in the sense of from that perspective of I'm not going to look at it because it can't be that bad unless it's a state of high emergency. That thing is going to survive.
Yeah.
And I project that that's what the voice is talking to you about all the time, unless there's something really, really wrong with it, then it doesn't need your attention.
Yeah, that's interesting when you said not looking at it. That I had that was part of the process too. You know, it's just this glance. It's like when I find a bird or something that's died, or you know, it's like, don't really look. You know, don't look at that wound to the tree. Don't look at, you know, death. But, you know, just it.
Yeah. You have a sense of what that is that prevents you from, where does the aversion come from?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, it has something to do with, what it triggers.
In you.
In me,
And like
those body sensations. And, let's just keep it,
Sort of like a nine karma, right?
Sort of like a nine karma,
That I don't want to confront what I feel and the chaos or the turbulence or I'm projecting wildly here. The sensations that make me feel disturbed or aware of that equanimity or calm being disturbed. So that's what I'm avoiding. I don't want to have that feeling. And so I won't look.
Just really intense body feelings that there's any, you know, go to any lengths to avoid having.
And even to the extent, as in the case of the lilac, to focus on the floral smell and the something that's pleasant in order to block out what it is that we don't want to attend to because of what it produces for you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's like the wound. That's, you know, it wasn't a huge wound. I mean, it wasn't even. I mean, it's a tree. I mean, it's, you know,
it's meant to recover.
And, you know, it's not something gory or, you know. But even that, you know, yeah, there's that superficial. Yeah, just. Avoiding being with.
Mm. Avoiding being with.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Avoiding being with.
Yeah.
Well, something you said earlier was interesting. I don't know if it's my projection or what the exploration. So there's one level where I don't want to be with this because I don't want to experience what I will feel when I'm with this. But when you started to talk about the wound, right, that it's going to survive, it sounds like a very, very different process, which is neglecting the worth or this person or this expression of life that we can bring attention to, however small the wound.
Yeah.
If it's hurting, if it needs something, then I'm willing to be with it. There's nothing so small about anything in life that it's not worth the attention.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. There's just like, there's this levels of what deserves attention and what doesn't deserve attention.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, has to be pretty high on the, you know, on the temperature gauge in order to deserve attention. There's that. Yeah, I don't know whether it's just that survival thing, you know.
Well, if you go back to the nine karma, you're forgetting, right? There's no acknowledgement that this and everything is as important as everything else,
mm-hmm.
because it's all,
mm-hmm.
all that.
And so the opportunity is, and this is, you know, to go back to be at center.
Well, if we acknowledge this is all of that, then it's easier to be that with that. That's all of it, right? And as I was saying, there's nothing wrong with the wound.
Yeah.
But if that is an expression of life needing attention,
uh-huh.
then we just attend to it.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with worth or anything. And I would project that process of aversion that prevents us from being with is, in a way, preventing us from being with life as it is.
Yeah.
In that large way in the larger context we talk about. Somehow it's the thing we talk about it in the resistance book, right? That
mm-hmm.
as soon as you approach a boundary of identity,
mm-hmm.
the sensations get really strong,
mm-hmm.
so you're trained not to cross the threshold of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I won't explore because I'm afraid of the sensations.
Mm-hmm.
But the payoff is I never get to be with life in all of its forms
mm-hmm.
of expression.
Yeah. Yeah, which is just so desired, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, yeah. That's being alive.
That's being alive.
That kind of, you know.
And I project it's not always right. There are places where it's not the automatic
mm-hmm.
reaction.
Mm-hmm.
There are places, and that's what we talk about, right? There, whatever it is that we avoid, those are the places where unconditional love and acceptance hasn't been brought to that.
Yeah.
And so whenever we encounter the barrier,
mm-hmm.
that's what we bring in.
Mm-hmm.
There are many places in which the barrier doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And there are places where it does.
Yeah.
And that's where work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the good news is you can go sit with that wound at any time.
Right.
And just because the initial impulse wasn't there, and you, as soon as you recognize that that's what it's doing, now I have some place to practice with it.
Yeah, and that seems like a fairly, safe,
Because I would project you love that life.
Yeah, you know, I just, Yeah. There's just that tendency to go at it as a job and as a.
There's nobody yet.
Some very odd noise just happened.
It's like a knock.
Someone.
I can't tell on what.
Three nights ago, I heard exactly the same thing at my house. It scared me too. It might be a critter that makes
sense. The same as lots of critters jumping and running around and
Knocking.
Like that Labrador.
Did it find its home? I don't know what it where it lives. Just shows up and lives on your porch if you let it.
Love and my mom were never in the same room. Never. I just, you know, and just recently having had a shift with that and feeling a lot of compassion and love for her that I, you know, just seems very new. And it seems like, somewhat of the same.
So if I'm tracking what you're saying and how we talk about it often in practice, right, that when there is a lack of love from someone or towards someone, it really is a place in ourselves that hasn't been embraced. And so whenever we encounter an absence of love in whatever form that is, then it's that place of going back to looking to see what stands in the way and for that barrier to fall so that we reclaim something in ourselves in love that has been denied that.
Just putting oneself in the place prone to having the barriers fall, and I don't know why. I mean,
it's time.
I don't know why. Why that?
You know, if that's the mystery of the
right, and it just seems like a great place to put oneself in the path of those kind of accidents.
The monastery. Absolutely. Thank you. Rebecca.
So there has been this, I saw something in y'all's conversation that shone a light on a koan type thing that I've had since I was young. And it was a scene from this movie. And it showed, it was one of those disaster movies of the 70s, where the Poseidon Adventure, and the ship was upside down. And there was a small group of people who were willing to try to get up, and then there was another whole mass of people that were going to perish. And there was an old priest who was going to stay with the people who would perish. And when the young leader said, why are you doing this? Don't you know you're all going to die? And he says, well, these are my people. I just have to And I have been kind of haunted by that whole thing my whole life, in a way. You know,
am I going to be the priest or am I going to be the leader?
Yeah. And oddly, both of them end up dying before the end of the movie. But what you said, I forget now what you said, but what it triggered in me was that what got neglected in me and that whole dualistic struggle that's been going on ever since I saw that movie is that what I didn't see was that that priest himself mattered. In other words, it wasn't, if I were to own these projections, it's not which am I going to be which way would help the most people? Was it really helping those people for him to stay and die with them? Or couldn't he have been more help if he went on, since we're talking about enneotype, types, help more people? Could he have maybe helped them get up to survive? And what I saw in the Alice conversation was he himself mattered.
Mm-hmm. And he did, yeah. Well, so who knows about what the priest's motives were. But the important insight for you is in that, in looking at how to help the most people, what was being ignored, the insight that you had about what's going on for you is there was no value
in his own life.
In his own life,
yes.
Yeah. Well, or the way we could say it is that that's missing in you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know why you're projecting that.
Yeah, I think the priest has plenty of value in his own life. It sounds like I don't know, but that's what I
haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah, if I'm tracking, right, if we go in the enneotype kind of way, then what we project is our worth, our value. My life's value comes from helping the most people, as opposed to my value is intrinsic. It's not conditional. So when I realize that this is intrinsically valuable, not because I'm going to help the most people, at which point my value is realized, a completely different orientation. It doesn't mean we're not helpful. It's the only place from which we're helpful.
That's the irony that I'm seeing is that in me, so I think this is where the metaphor of the Poseidon Adventure ends. So in me, I'm kind of seeing a situation now in my life where I can see the price that's paid for that.
Yeah. Because I would project, it's a quid pro quo. Right. The price that's paid is at some level, if our sense of ourselves is conditional, then when we're let down by conditional, then we're disappointed. Because the whole purpose of being helpful, which is not seen in the karma, is that you would be accepted and helped and loved, or whatever it is as your reason for being helpful. That's the karmic emptiness in a conditional orientation.
Yes. Yes, exactly so. Because I am duped into thinking if I give and support and help unconditionally, then we're going to have unconditional love.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not what happens, because I'm left out of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is that hidden
agenda.
Motive, agenda.
Well,
hidden even from me.
Yeah, which is the reason we don't see that it's conditional, right?
Yeah.
Because even the way you said it is, if I give and support and love unconditionally, what we're going to have is unconditional love, which in a practice sense is absolutely true. If I give unconditional love, I have an unconditional love. But if you give them that place where I'm expecting something in return, which I don't see as my true motivation, which happens from that ego place of lack, there is, I'm not actually giving unconditional love. My love is conditional on receipt, reciprocity at some point.
Yeah. And the really diabolical thing is that whole expectation was so densely hidden. I would never, in fact, I'm still having a hard time writing in this moment saying with the quid pro quo, like, I would say, I don't think I expected that. I don't think I expected.
Well, was it your experience?
It wasn't my experience.
No, because when we're identified with that orientation, it's what Sherry says, the example she often quotes is, if I'm a person who's an early riser, I can wake up late every day, but my story is I'm still an early riser.
Yes.
From the orientation that I'm identified with, I don't get up late.
I'm giving unconditionally.
That's right.
I'm giving. What do you mean?
So you're not present. It's what we're talking about the radio show. Until you know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't seem real to you that you had an expectation because it wasn't your experience.
Right. Because of the identification.
Because of the identification.
Mm-hmm.
It's seen through the eyes of the identification, doesn't allow us to be in touch with what we see when we see the identification.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what it is it's humbling.
Yes.
Which is the idea of the two, right?
Yeah. Yeah, humbling is the word and very, it just leaves me in a place of such gratitude because I know. I mean, I just know. I would never in a million years have seen this.
Mm-hmm.
Seen that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how in the world would a human see something so well hidden
mm-hmm.
without a practice like this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like this. I mean, I'm not saying this is the only practice, but a practice like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Because I project it leaves you in a place where knowing that pattern actually allows you to be what you truly desire to be. To come from the place of completely being unconditional.
Mm-hmm.
And it frees you up to do that
mm-hmm.
when you're not in the orientation of conditionality.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, that's a lovely consolation, you know? Because it can be really, well, the flip side of humility is humiliation, so it can be humiliating, you know, if we go there.
Right.
But what you just said is quite the opposite of, no, it actually gives me what the heart desires.
Yes, and in the sense that you started us out with, because when you love unconditionally, what you have is the unconditional. Like, because it's the most paradoxical thing in my experience that nothing changes. You'd still be the person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just that your intention flips. I still give unstintingly. I just love with wholeheartedly. All of those same things are true.
Mm-hmm.
It's that I just receive it in a completely different way where before I couldn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just all of you, just more really you. Jen?
So I feel like every conversation I've seen different things. But that last one in particular, well, kind of all starts to come together, but I was looking at the thing about turning away from the wound, and it was, I had this string of days towards the end of the trip where I just was so, I guess one way I could say it was like on the verge of tears all the time. And it was that place where it simultaneously, it could feel like just complete tears of joy and also grief right in there with it. And in that last conversation I was looking at the place, so to bring the Enneagram into it. I was looking at what really resonated was that place of like, wow, there's this really deep thing that's happening and I don't see that it's happening. Mm-hmm. And then getting some assistance to see that it's happening. Mm-hmm. And there's big emotion with that, because what I see is happening is 180 degrees from what I actually want to be happening. Mm-hmm. And when I see it, there's such a resonance of, yeah, I can see that that's happening. But at the same time, if you ask me, like, so how's that happening? Or even, what do you mean that what's happening? I would say, I have no idea. Because sort of like, you know, so that place of like, no, I am offering unconditional love. And then someone says to me, well, maybe you're not. And I say, and it really resonates that I'm not. But then, so how are you not? I don't know, because I think I am.
Yes.
So on some level, the resonance is so clear that that information is spot on. Mm. But it's still, I was talking about it a little bit at the time, using that image that I always love to use of the supposedly Native Americans that couldn't see the ships, right?
Yes.
When Columbus's ships were coming, but that the kind of shaman folks saw the ripples and knew to, had the wisdom to stay with it. Mm-hmm. So it's that feeling like, wow, I'm seeing the ripples, and there's relief in that because it starts to explain so much mm-hmm. on that of where the suffering comes from. And I think where the Enneagram thing comes in is that until I see the ship, which with one particular thing, I'm not seeing the ship yet, there, what can come in is a huge self-consciousness. Mm-hmm. And like I try to get it right. Because
I don't see the ship.
I don't see the ship. So what are you talking about? You know, is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Is it that? Is it, do you mean this? Do you mean that? Mm-hmm. And it can be very demoralizing.
Mm-hmm. So let's see if I can articulate the process you're looking at. So there's that, I mean, what drops in for me is we talk about living at different levels, mm-hmm. right? Because awareness has the ability to be aware of many things at the same time. Mm-hmm. So there's that surface level of the experience of I'm an early riser. Mm-hmm. That's my experience. Mm-hmm. You're telling me I don't get up early? Mm-hmm. Well, look at the time.
Right.
Yeah, actually that's true. But that's not my experience. Mm-hmm. And so there's the awareness of that dissonance mm-hmm. that's very, very confusing mm-hmm. because the desire mm-hmm. is so sincere. Mm-hmm. But the evidence mm-hmm. is pointing to mm-hmm. something else. Mm-hmm. And so how do you make sense of that? Mm-hmm. And if you can't see how to make sense of it, mm-hmm. given the Enneatype, mm-hmm. then it's like all bets are off. Mm-hmm. Because there's no point of reference
yeah.
to make sense of that dissonance or those two things. Mm-hmm. Like, why is it happening? If my desire is this, mm-hmm. but my behavior is that, mm-hmm. then I don't actually know how to make my desire my behavior.
Yeah.
And I have to find that out, and I don't have any clues.
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. Yeah. So I saw something when you were reflecting about that. Let's see if I can... that it's like... Because it was something about, so the desire is sincere, So from authenticity is this way and wants to be this way and all like that. And the conditioned system comes through the human being and acts in all these ways that isn't that. Mm-hmm. Then when that's called out, there's a resonance. Authenticity can recognize the dissonance. But the conditioned system flees. So all there is to turn back and is the person is pointed at, as if that's where the thing's coming from.
Yes.
You right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So what I would say, what I think you're saying is, if we believe that we are the ego,
exactly.
Then when it's called out, mm-hmm. what takes the blame is, what feels like takes the blame is the human being.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's such an identification with the worthlessness or whatever's being pointed at as it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I accept that. Which then really, really wounds the sincerity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And because that's not what's being called out.
Right, exactly.
But that's what is being pointed at as lacking.
Mm-hmm. But that's what's being pointed at as lacking.
Well, if I sincerely want to be this,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm shown that I'm not that,
yeah.
if what this is going to make as the wound is a lack of sincerity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what feels devastating
mm-hmm.
to the authenticity. Of course I'm sincere, but I've been told I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
However that translates for you.
Yeah. So I think the piece of... So when you were saying it a minute ago, the relief is that, oh,
it's not me.
It's not me, but even before that, so when it's pointed out, I kind of lost it, but, so I think the initial reaction is one of relief, because, and I've had it actually like 3 times in the last few months where there's been that emotion that I was talking about, and it's kind of a relief, like, oh, thank you. Like, that explains this that's happening that I haven't been able to see.
I saw the must.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, yeah, what's interesting to me right the second is that I think, so that's kind of the initial thing. And then it must be sort of that be. Come in, turn around, take it personally.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, yeah. Yeah, sort of that, well, how am I going to, I don't know how not to do that again,
mm-hmm.
you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't see it in the first place. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, it's just a,
Well, there's so many ways to practice with it, right? Because ultimately, it doesn't matter. As long as you can embrace what is arising completely, it's not a question of sincerity or non-sincerity or behavior or non-behavior. No matter what, it's completely unconditionally accepted. And from that place, you could spend a lifetime trying to work the behavior out and see the shift.
Mm-hmm. In other words, if you're coming from the place of it's about being with the human as the process unfolds, unconditionally,
yes.
then whether you ever actually see the ship or not.
Right, because I would project that what is being built into that process, again, it's so many levels and layers, I don't know if that's true for you, but until you see the ship, you're not free.
Yeah.
You're not acceptable.
You mean that's the belief? Is that what you're saying?
At some level, right? I don't know, but
that... Well, this was clarifying, you weren't saying that that's what's so. Until you see the ship, then you're not.
No, but that I'm still trying to get it right until I see the ship.
Yeah.
But what's behind getting it right and seeing the ship is that somehow it's going to make a difference in assisting the desire to be the behavior, and then you'll be the right person, which is right back at the karma.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a hard one to untie because there's a level of skill where you're just interested in knowing how there's a behavior that can reflect a particular way of being. But if that's tied to whether or not you're acceptable or not, then that becomes a very pernicious place for ego.
Yeah. Horrible.
Yeah, for the human, rather.
Yeah.
It's a fabulous place for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's just such a, you know, as you're talking, I'm just, you know, there's that place for me anyway where, you know, there's karma kind of going around, and not realizing it, having that relationship with it of, you know, moving the gestures around. Right, but not realizing it for some, you know, working with it, and then dropping into the place I project you're talking about, which is that much deeper place, and with that, just again, I think that's where the tenderness is, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's a model that you might be familiar with because we all work with this person who has that model, which sort of explains at some level what those levels are,
mm-hmm.
right? So there's the authenticity,
mm-hmm.
the wound,
mm-hmm.
the compensation for that,
mm-hmm.
which produces the false identity,
mm-hmm.
and based on what you're identified with, you have a completely different.
Yeah.
Reaction, and all of them could be reacting to the circumstance at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know at what level you're working with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And if I'm tracking what you're saying, then you don't know at what level you're working with it, except that there are all these clues.
Right.
Right.
And part of what the sorting process is as you pay closer and closer attention is whatever framework assists you to know
mm-hmm.
what level of identification is operating.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the confusion happens when, because of what is considered to be authenticity is often mistaken as the place of deepest emotion, which may not be the case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It's just fun. I mean, in that way of such a puzzle.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, that's another good quote, right? That's what we say at the end of every "There is nothing wrong with you." It is fun. From one perspective.
Yeah. Well,
you know.
Yes.
In other words, when it's not fun, that's one of those clues.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yes, we say it's fun in the larger sense of the word, but I think it was in the radio show that somebody said, I couldn't call it fun. And it was Eleanor. I can't call it fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because, really, spiritual practice is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's painful.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful on its way to being joyful, right? But to dismiss the crucible experience of transformation, we don't do ourselves any service.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just, I don't know, there's such a poignancy about it.
Yes.
I guess that's what it is. And I think, yeah, just having an experience and then the last, yeah, just the end of the trip and all the things. And for me, that's one of the things being in Zambia is that it's so much more obvious how fragile we are to me when I'm there. In the sense of, you know, I'm talking to Beatrice lots of thoughts going. She's telling me about the, you know, her life, and then this, and then this, and then, you know, that baby died when it was not 3 months, and that baby died when she was 11 months, and, you know, just, wow, you know, just so, it just, it reminds me how, I don't know, that's just a piece of it, like the tree, you know, and its wound, and the, you know.
Uh-huh, so what you're pointing to is how fragile we are as human beings.
Yeah, that's, sorry, as human beings.
Yeah,
exactly. And that somehow that touching into the unconditional, to the, I don't know, anyway, I can't describe it, but there's, it's poignant that simultaneously how fragile we are as human beings and then touching into the spiritual unconditional can be so, such an amazing experience.
Yeah. It really is the experience of love.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know if Egan said he should not talk tonight, or you should talk tonight, or what Mike was saying. So I don't know if I went for Egan or not.
Doesn't matter. You put up your hand. That's what's happening now.
Because everybody has such great ways of talking about practice and human process and things, and even or you're saying that you can, you know, articulate yourself, and you always talk in terms of content and blah blah blah. And
they've been around here for a lot longer.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this story forever. Just about that I'm not coherent and not able to articulate and not able to remember, you know, step by step, like, whatever.
Well, and that's good, right? So you know you have it. You know that story's been around forever, and you don't know whether, I mean, you don't know whether you're listening to what you're listening to, but you're going to talk about whatever's going on for you. So you put up your hands.
Yeah, because I have to take advantage of.
You have to.
But I have to take advantage of.
Exactly. You put yourself in an environment where you're encouraged to process about everything that's going on for you.
And I already get like such kind guidance just when I get really overwhelmed and the blurriness happens while trying to read the instructions, you know, then my new working meditation task was just to read the instructions and not worry about getting everything out. Because, yeah, that was really overwhelming to me. But I think that then I had tears, but because of the kindness, you know, and also grief, kind of, in a way.
Mm-hmm. And the grief was because
I guess just feeling sorry for my younger self, but I don't even remember my childhood, so I don't know.
So grief for the part of you that did not receive that kindness for so long. And that moves us to such an extent of practicing so that we are kind to all parts of ourselves and we don't let this torture us, right? Yeah. And so does it feel, Anna, that given that that's your experience here, that what you are, what you receive is kindness, that's something that you can offer to yourself?
Yeah. Sometimes I think there's something in between. I think the mentor can shows up when I record and listen, mm-hmm. but I guess then I don't really listen, or I do listen back to it. But I can receive more of the general messages, like trust, you know. I don't know, not like, yeah. It's not like direct, oh, what is grief? Or, I don't know. It's more like general mentoring about nothing in particular. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so yes, there is the experience of grief because some aspect of you did not receive it. There's also an acknowledgement that you are able to bring kindness and give this person that kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there more?
No.
Penny.
There was a comment on the radio show the other day that generated for me a helpful insight. Uh-huh. So someone was talking about looking for common ground with other people. Mm-hmm. And that certainly rang a bell. And what arose for me that was helpful, Sherry was talking about coming from unconditional love. And what arose for me that was helpful was that the seeking for, in my case, the seeking for common ground is actually seeking for a reason.
Seeking for a reason.
Yeah, mm-hmm. A reason to connect.
A reason to connect.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And coming from love is the common ground, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's just really helpful to see that. And often, you know, common ground is available in terms of content, and that's nice. Mm-hmm. But it was a moment of clarity for me that it's really like searching for a reason that this other person earns the connection with me. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I, which is a little more brutal way of saying it, but also it was a big piece of realism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the seeking of the common ground, yeah, I don't want to be in opposition to you, but I am, so let's see what connects us, but that reason to connect implies that that person has to live up to
right.
that connection.
And the connection is content.
And the connection is content.
Yeah, so it was just very clarifying. And I actually had an experience. So, you know, I've been involved sort of in the political scene in the last year or so, and I was at a meeting the other night, and there was some anguished talking on the part of some people about encountering people from a very different perspective and how there just didn't seem to be common ground, and what does one do and what does one say. And I had this great experience with a good friend who comes from a very different place, and she was talking about her perspective, and I just listened, and it happened that there were just the two of us, which was helpful, usually we're in a group. And so at the end of it, I said, well, you know, what's interesting is if you just change the language back and forth, the labels back and forth, that's how it looks from this perspective too, but just, you know, the opposite version. And she said, oh, really? I said, yeah, it is. And what was interesting about it was then we dropped it and we went off hiking. But what was so interesting was that the common ground was that we listened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And neither of us was actually trying to convince the other one of anything. Mm-hmm. But each of us felt like we were respectfully received. Mm-hmm. And And so I've had that experience. And then basically each of us, we know each other, so each of us came from that.
Yeah.
And that was the common ground. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, putting it together with what was said on the radio show and then seeing that and then remembering that experience mm-hmm. really brought it home to me that that if I'm not coming from love, the common ground is conditional.
Yes.
And it's just helpful to be aware of that. And truly, there are certain encounters I have where I'm not much coming from love. And so it's good to see that.
Yeah.
That's what's in the way.
Yeah. That notion that the only common ground ever is achieved in love sort of takes the pressure away from having to seek common ground in content and position.
Right.
And so when we look at love, what love does is it doesn't judge and it listens mm-hmm. and it's present.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's actually easier to achieve connection from love
right.
than to achieve connection over position or content.
Right. It is. And the interesting thing is too that from love, it's also easier to see. Where the positions are not so different.
Yes.
Because we're not coming from the positions.
That's right. So from love, it's possible to acknowledge love, but from a position, you can only see a position.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what I take away from that conversation, which I think is what you're saying, is you cannot actually get to common ground is a false, it's a false thing. Because where you're coming from will never get to common ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's seeking something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, and it's like perfectionism, you know, it's actually seeking the lack of common ground.
That's right, because you acknowledge that we're different, mm-hmm. and now what little thing can you find that you can agree
right.
around,
right.
which, and by definition, the reason you're in opposition is because of the very place in which you're opposition, you cannot find common ground.
Right. Right.
And to realize that's the clarity, right?
Yeah.
It's the futility that only leads to separation and frustration.
Yeah.
And so I just get to say what I get to say. I listen to what the other person gets to say.
And then we go hiking.
And then we go hiking.
yeah.
Which is the common ground. We're on common ground.
That's right, yeah.
No pun intended.
And the common ground that is sought from conditioning like that, even when it is found, it's within the context of this is sort of the tenuous little link we have.
Yeah. It's a compromise.
Yeah.
And an unsustainable one is what?
Yeah.
It's tenuous.
Yeah. And it sounds so good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Seeking common ground sounds like such a good thing.
Yeah.
So it's just really helpful to see through that.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really helpful to see when we're being set up that way.
Yeah.
And to realize that perhaps not seeking that, but seeking love is the way to achieve some kind of measure of respect and enmity and generosity of spirit, which we all have, because we are all the intelligence that animates. That's really what connects us.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. So go ahead.
I just want to say the only common ground we're standing on, this is very profound to me.
It is.
I mean, seeking that other kind of common ground is only happening in, you know,
in conditioned mind.
And this is, if we could just get it, this is the common ground we're standing on.
Yeah.
And are we out of time?
No, we can't.
I just want to ask, there's this common ground question that gave rise to. I have been, I've fallen into this practice of praying for folks,
mm-hmm.
praying for Sequoia, praying for, you know, everybody. But it's so interesting, this process. I just wanted to look at this for a minute. I've just come to this place of like, what am I doing? You know, let's see. I started out like it just maybe it was a sense of control, or it felt like just a really loving thing to do, and just send all this good energy and And then it's gone to this place of, what do I know? You know? What do I know? I mean, what I know is, may all beings be happy, may all beings be at peace, may all beings, you know? Really, I genuinely wish that. But for, you know, like I started out saying prayers for my children and then, you know, everyone, and then the president, and then, you know, and then it was like, I don't know, I've just come to this place of...
Well, it does it feel like what happened is you moved from a place where you wanted the attention to be was the interconnectedness of everything, and then just it's the difference between saying I'm grateful for this, I'm grateful for this, I'm grateful for this, and I'm grateful for this, and actually feeling gratitude.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that the shift that you're seeing?
It's just, I don't know whether it's just conditioned mind getting in there, taking away something that just felt really lovely,
mm-hmm.
and just taking
it sounds like that.
I'm starting to question it, because it's just coming, it's gone to this place of like, who am I?
Yeah, yeah. That sounds like a self-hating place. Right? Who are you to pray for all these people?
Right.
And make a difference.
What is it that I want? You know? It comes down to
what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Uh-huh. What are you achieving by your prayer?
Or you don't even know. You don't even know what is the best thing.
Yeah. But you don't have to.
Okay.
To pray, you don't have to. I mean, that's the whole thing. We don't know anything about it. The whole sense would be something would be revealed to us.
Okay. All right. That's good. Okay. Yeah. Because I can see that it was just, you know, was taking something that started out being like really a high point of.
Yeah,
you know.
And to me, that happens with any practice, right? It's sort of where it ends up. It goes
uh-huh.
from being
yeah.
something that is juicy and fulfilling and
yeah.
slowly gets eroded,
yeah.
corroded by conditioning
yeah.
and all the energy goes out of it.
Yeah.
And if you are praying because what you're doing is to establish a relating process with the intelligence that animates,
mm-hmm.
then it's like an ongoing dialogue that you have to rescue from the clutches of this
yeah.
of
yeah.
conditioning
yeah.
because it may start out from that first place,
mm-hmm.
but it has the potential to reveal
mm-hmm.
so much about
mm-hmm.
so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hmm. That's interesting. Yeah, well, it released a lot of energy to just talk about it a bit and look at it. And gosh darn, I'm going to take it back.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it can always grow from what it was
yeah.
if you're willing for its dimensionality to change.
Exactly. That's what I thought, too. It is. It's a growing thing, and, you know... Who knows what
yeah,
the next stage?
Yeah, which is what Scott started us off with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if for me, prayer is dynamic
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
it's a relating
mm-hmm.
and it's an exchange in silence
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
of it's not what's separate but what's distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talk, and then it talks, and I talk, and it talks, and I know more, and I talk differently, and it talks differently, and it's a knowing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So it evolves.
It evolves and deepens and yeah.
Changes.
Okay. Cool.
I find it really exciting to be in a dialogue with consciousness.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's truly a dialogue in the sense of I see something and then something is revealed
mm-hmm.
to me, which allows me to change what I see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. I can see that there was a dialogue going along, and then
you've got dialogue.
Yeah, somebody else picked up. Yeah.
So we redirect to what I want to be in relationship to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's useful.
June.
Every time I've spoken in group lately, I repeated something the Buddha supposedly said. When you see how perfect everything is, you will tilt your head back and laugh at the sky. And every time I see that Buddha or remember it, I had that experience.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of weeks ago, there was a peace quote from Basho.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot see anything that is not a flower. Mm-hmm. And you cannot think anything that is not the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, to me, just points at the utter perfection of everything.
Mm-hmm. Now, the divine shining through.
Yeah, yes. And of course, I go through my day, and attention is narrowed, and grumbling about something, or I'm just lost in distraction with one thing or another. And then there's coming back to consciousness and seeing that just because there's getting lost in thought or distraction or grumbling doesn't mean this does not negate the nature of the perfection of the universe.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. That the unconsciousness, the moments where you're not tilting your head up and laughing, doesn't necessarily mean that the perfection is gone.
Right.
It's just that you weren't present.
You cannot think anything that is not the moon.
Yeah. You cannot think that anything.
You cannot think anything. There is nothing you can think that is not the moon.
Yeah, and that we really get that. And to me, I was just looking at it the other day where I was writing about it actually, this line from an email class response where spiritual practice is much more difficult than awareness practice, because in spiritual practice you're required to see God everywhere in everything. Right? And I was exploring that in a Musings article where in awareness practice we are trained to see. But in spiritual practice we're trained to see what we see as the divine itself. Right? And so to some extent, to train the awareness to recognize the grumble as God also, not the duality between unconsciousness and consciousness.
Yeah.
That every act isn't, I think it's the line from the Bhagavad Gita, everything you do in worship, in adoration of. Everything you do is worship. And can you train the awareness to register everything, including whatever it is, the distraction or the narrow focus or the lack of attention, as that? Because if we were coming from that place, the tilting the head and laughing at the sky happens in the grumble. Not just when we're not grumbling.
There's nothing this little illusion of separation can do that in any way negates perfect love.
Nothing. And there's such a measure of egocentricity at some point in practice. I mean, it does and can. Yeah. Yeah.